On this episode of Entertainment Education, the podcast, the one with movies, I dive deep into collections and vaults of classic and modern cinematic masterpieces and how the stories teach and change society. From Disney to documentaries to the Dead Poets Society, we discuss how films have impacted wide audiences and many generations. I welcome my guest host this week, film critic and podcast host, Eric Childress.
Help. Spanish. You're taking 12th grade calculus?
Yeah, I like math.
Ew, why?
Because it's the same in every country.
It's beautiful.
Entertainment Education, the podcast, an eight-part series where host Alan Babiarz Lira will take you through the journey of how entertainment can educate and create social change.
Oh, yes, the past can hurt. But the way I see it, you can either run from it or learn from it.
Hello and welcome back, everybody. Entertainment Education, the podcast, episode 3. I can't believe I've made it all the way through 3 episodes already. Our first one, just talking about the basics. The second one, I hope you enjoyed. A couple weeks ago, we talked about music. We are the world. Okay, I'm going to stop singing now. But you know what? Episode 3 is also, you know, these are all my favorite subjects. I can't lie. But we're going to be talking about movies and how movies impact culture and can teach and create social change. And today, my guest is somebody very exciting. I've been saying that I know every episode. I know, guys. But it really is, really, he really is an exciting person. His name is Eric Childress. He's a writer. He's a radio host, a podcaster, and a television personality, all specializing in film. He's been a professional in the field for over 25 years and has been all over the mediums that you can think of, podcasts, film, news, prints, everything, right? You can currently see him on Business First AM every Thursday morning, and he can be read on Rotten Tomatoes. He's got 2 podcasts, the Movie Madness podcast with the Now Playing Network, where he reviews weekly film releases. And then he's got the Friendship Dilemma, where he co-hosts with Morgan Geyer, and they discuss the male and female friendships that are portrayed in movies. That is interesting. I think I'm going to have to go back and listen to every single episode because that sounds amazing. You know, I think one of the most interesting things about him is he is one of the founders, a producer and programmer of the Chicago Critics Film Festival, which has been around for 11 years now this May at the Chicago's very own Music Box Theater. I love every Thanksgiving going to see The Sound of Music there. That's one of my traditions. I love it. I love it. Love it. Is it Easter? I forget which holiday. Now it's escaping me now that I can't think about it. Fun fact, it's the only film festival in existence that is curated by working film critics. And with that, Eric, welcome. Welcome. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for coming on. You seem like the appropriate person to have with me. You may have talked a little bit once or twice about movies, huh?
Yeah, a few things. Yeah. Over the years, I think I have, I've talked to a few people about movies.
All right. Well, you know what? Why don't we go back? How did your passion, your love for movies start, and where did it come from?
Started my dad. Really, I mean, when I go back and think about when I first started realizing what movies were, my dad was a big movie fan. And even though we didn't necessarily, although I remember very early memories of going to the theater with my parents and seeing things at the local theaters, I can't say that we went that often. We went for certain big event movies and things like that. And if something caught my eye, eventually they would take me to see it. But it was like seeing the movies on like television, and unfortunately the edited for television versions that we see on like, you know, Sunday night movies and stuff like that on ABC and NBC. Mm-hmm. And I just remember him, like, every once in a while, a particular movie that he was a fan of would be on, and he would make sure that we were sitting in front of the television to watch those particular movies with the commercials and all that. And that it just kind of snowballed from there. Then I started seeking out those movies or things that would start to interest me. And anytime he would an opportunity to go to the movies, that is something I wanted to see, he would take me to see them. So that I think that's where it began. And of course, we got cable and VCRs and stuff like that. And then it just, it completely rolled downhill from there.
You know what? I completely agree with that. And there's, something oddly comforting about watching a movie on TV still. For those of us that have TV still, with the commercials in it, like seeing, The Wizard of Oz or Sound of Music or something playing with the commercials, it does give you comfort. It takes me back to my childhood, just as you were describing. I grew up very much in a Disney household, so I relate to what you're describing, the Sunday night movies on ABC and all of that. All right, so we are what I really, really want to talk about and what I really, really want to focus on is how movies can teach and how movies can create a social change. So in your opinion, what are some of the most successful examples of movies that have effectively incorporated or have some kind of underlying message in them?
I mean, it's a really interesting question and topic that you posed for this episode, because I've been thinking about it a lot ever since you reached out to me to be a part of the show. And it's really it's I mean it's hard to say in particular to nail down like a specific film as a result of like, did this movie affect social change? Did this movie cause someone to think a different way? Because we're all so different. And just the way that, a movie can come along that maybe takes people down a different path, whether, getting us in touch with a particular lifestyle or race or, politics even, anything that brings us to any kind of like social change or a sort of a plea for empathy to certain causes and things like that. Is the movie responsible for that, or is it something that people resist or are open to? There are a lot of factors I think that go into something like this. Like one of the titles that I wrote down, and neither of us were alive when this movie came out, so I can't say to a full degree of certainty how this really affected any kind of specific social change. But when you think of a movie like To Kill a Mockingbird, for example, which is a movie that obviously based on a well-known book, and became a Oscar winner as a result of it, dealing with racial issues and racial change, and it's a story about a father and daughter, and the way that Gregory Peck, as in some ways, kind of became like America's father in that story. That he was someone that whose easygoing lessons and calm demeanor and words and just the righteousness for good could speak to people in a way, and especially at a time around the I think it was before the civil rights movement, or right in the heart of the civil rights movement, that movie came out. Is it something that people who are open to hearing a particular side were, how open were they? And like, if this movie played in the South, would those, the people who were so fearful of change and were on the wrong side of history, if you will, how did they respond to it? I think that there's a lot of questions that go into this. And I think that, we'll probably unpack a few of them during this episode.
As you talk about To Kill a Mockingbird, you're making me think of, one that I grew up watching all the time. My mom was a big fan of Fried Green Tomatoes. So you're looking at not only racial issues that you're in that movie, but also, some potential underlying LGBTQ issues and storylines and so I hear where you're going with this, and it's making my head spin.
Well, it's a
But
big
what
topic. I mean, it's a
you
really big topic. I think that, like, even like the couple of titles that I wrote down, are they specific to a wider audience, or are they specific to us as individuals? Movies that, like, what movies for either of us were movies that got us to look at the world in a greater context and something that we were open to, as opposed to being preached to, which I know is something that we're going to talk about on the show. And that, I mean, like, the movies that might have opened up the world for you were not the movies that opened up the world for me or, everybody else. So it's just
Absolutely.
like, it's hard to, like, when I see these, because I'll admit, I was looking through, like, lists of people who say, like, oh, these are the most wide, the world-changing movies and whatnot. I'm like, really? Were they for everybody? Because, like, some of these movies I don't necessarily think made any difference to me, maybe because I was already on board with what it was selling, that kind of thing. So it's like different generations looked at different movies. There's just so much to unpack with this topic.
Let's go back a little bit then to some commonality that we all had. We all grew up with these bad kind of driver's ed videos and you know what? Don't do drugs, don't, do this, don't join a gang, don't do that. Would you classify that as kind of the original educational movie? I mean, those obviously specifically those were created to teach a lesson and educate not children, but school age, school age people. But how did those transition into something like Avatar, where you're trying to save the environment or deal with something like that?
Well, I mean, when you I mean, you even labeled it like bad educational videos. I mean, these are the things that, we see now on, like, Mystery Science Theater 3000, where they make fun of all those old 1950s and those, don't do drugs and the Reefer Madness and all those types of movies and whatnot. And I think that, I mean, I don't know if how those translate. I mean, how those are, like, utilized in schools and stuff today. They probably just show movies that deal with these specific issues more than they show these, like, quote unquote educational videos, when most of those, I think, were more trying to instill fear in all of us more than trying to educate us in a worldly sense of what drugs and sexual intercourse and all these things, we were meant to be, like, we were forced to be fearful of these things. And that was the way that they taught us about these situations. I mean, I remember very specifically, towards the end of one of the school years, it was probably like 7th or 8th grade, where I think we were just waiting for the weather to clear up for so we could have our, like, yearly picnic or something like that outdoors. And they had the class played this old, like, 70s, like, don't do drugs video. And I can't, I'll tell you, I can't remember anything about the message of that video, but what I do remember is that during that video, they played concert footage of Eric Clapton singing the song Cocaine. And what do you think that all of us 7th or 8th graders took
A
away from
teenager,
that? We immediately started singing Cocaine all around the school, because we thought it was the funniest song we had ever heard in our lives. Now, I've never done cocaine, so, I mean, that didn't have any effect on me, obviously, but that's the thing that I took away from that video, was that song, more than the actual message of
And
it.
as a 13-year-old, 12, 13, 14, whatever age that is at that point, you hope, they hope that you're not taking that message back. However,
Right.
that's what's coming out of it. Yeah,
Yeah, they didn't want
absolutely.
us. The last thing they wanted showing us this video is us going up and down the hall, saying, "You wanna get down on the ground, cocaine." They didn't want us doing that, but we were. because it was funny.
Oh, so okay, let's drop the funny stuff and let's talk about real feature films now and transition a little bit about that. You know, I briefly mentioned Avatar. It's got kind of an underlying message about the environment and saving people. Actually, side note, my first guest said it was very, very down his throat and he did not appreciate it. One of my favorites, though, is Dead Poets Society. Not just because it's about education, because I do love a movie about education, being a teacher myself, but that you learn to come of your own, become your own person, come of your personality. You know, Robin Williams really inspires these young men to, dare to find themselves and be their own people. How do are these kind of movies impacting society now at that time?
Well, I mean, a movie like that, I mean, movies that are generally that focus on teachers and classrooms and stuff like that, I mean, it's become, I mean, over time, it's a trope. You have the inspirational teacher. Maybe we've had, someone who inspired us or someone that we really liked growing up as a teacher. I very doubt most of us had these specific type of teachers that changed our entire worldview in like a single class, which is what a lot of these movies end up being. I mean, I happen to like most of Dead Poets Society, though I know a lot of people that think that that movie is very heavy-handed and whatnot. And
Oh, absolutely.
yeah, so
Yes.
it's just like, so clearly it didn't inspire them very much if they walked away with that message from it. But I mean, I think that, I mean, those movies, can be important. I think that these messages of individuality and breaking free from norms, discovering, opening yourself up to a greater portion of the world and reading. I mean, you can't, that's a message that should never go out of style, obviously. And but yeah, it's like if you don't respond to the movie, then the movie that doesn't inspire anything. But I'm sure that there are a lot of young people at the time and maybe are still discovering that movie that do find something into that. And it could be something as simple as opening themselves up to the world of poetry or literature or something like that. Or maybe it inspires them to become a teacher. It's like, what specific aspect of any movie does anyone take away with it and lead them down a specific path? So it's like, again, it's like so many things that any single movie could open you up to, and you never know it until you start going down that route.
Yeah, so when I first saw the movie in high school, and I remember taking away, sorry guys, spoiler alert, if you haven't seen the movie, it's got a very dark ending. It's very heavy ending, but it really gave us as high schoolers in an English class a different perspective of literature, and Robin Williams really did kind of inspire. Now I agree with you. We've never actually had that teacher that's all like, "Hey, everything's amazing. I hope to aspire to be that one day, but hopefully, we'll get there." But I agree, movies about education are taking you there. What would you say about community activism or something like a Footloose, where we're going against the man?
Yeah, I'm glad
I'm
you asked.
throwing the I'm throwing this one in left field. I know this one wasn't in the
No.
notes.
No, because I was literally just thinking about that as far as Dead Poets Society is concerned, because I think one of the things that I don't know if I took away specifically from that movie, but over time, the idea of like railing against the establishment and recognizing that the establishment is not living up to the standards of a society or what you find important or what you believe in. Or is just not doing right by their fellow man and woman. So I think that, I mean, that's something that you get a little bit out of Dead Poets Society, and a lot of school movies do focus on that. Footloose obviously is something that is railing against religion, which I think is something that over time, I bet you could probably, put some kind of line into the decline in people's belief systems over time, and the way that, I'm not like, say like movies are responsible for this, but the idea that the belief and the way that people use, specifically the way that people use their faith at for negatives as opposed to positives. I think that over time you could see that movies have chipped away with that because they show the negatives about that. I mean, rarely do you see a, I don't want to say that, but no, I mean, it's just over time that I think that the idea of no, I mean, and it's not just being like, like you use the term the man and whatnot. If it's just if it's just, being contrarian for the sake of being contrarian, that's not really the, I would call the right path. But when you recognize that people with more power than you do are not utilizing that power for the advancement of human condition, basically. I think that that's a very powerful thing, and I think that's a lesson that a lot of young people do get out of movies, and that's something I think the movies have successfully communicated over time.
You brought up an interesting point that I've made once or twice with other people, not here yet, but people who are movies that do show some kind of aspect of faith, and most of, and this is largely my opinion, use faith as almost a humor side character or something to poke fun of, as opposed to having it in the mainstream. Do we need a Passion of the Christ to be released every month? Probably not. We don't need a Marvel movie released every month either. But I think you do bring up a good point that what we are learning, or sorry, what we, what we're learning within these films is to, not necessarily, like you said, stand up to the man, but learn to properly do it. How about that?
Well, yeah, I mean, to an extent, it depends on, how far you think people go. I mean, we're not talking like terrorism
Yeah,
necessarily like
right.
that,
Absolutely,
obviously.
absolutely.
Right. But we're talking about like, activism, outreach, speaking out, making sure that people's voices who are repressed, make sure that they're heard. Those kind of things are very important. And, I mean, two of the biggest institutions, quote unquote, that, movies and us as citizens take on all the time are obviously government and religion. And all, like a school, like a school headmaster, a school board takes on the place of like a government or a religious hierarchy, basically. Any kind of hierarchy that is, repressing anyone's voice or lifestyle or whatever it might be, is inherently just wrong, right?
And
I mean, so
you can come back to To Kill a Mockingbird at that point right there as you're discussing that.
without question. And like I said, a lot of school movies deal with that kind of thing. Footloose, I guess being one of them. And these are, I think that, like you mentioned, the like a character of faith is sometimes relegated to be a sidekick or a goofy sidekick, and that's an attitude in reflection of people fighting back against that kind of thing, because usually, sometimes those characters are stereotypically obtuse. Sometimes, there are, I'd have to go look through like the swath of films to find like a very even keeled person of faith, someone that it's just a trait as opposed to something that they feel they need to preach to someone to get them on the, like their same wavelength and whatnot. And someone that uses the concept of faith and their own beliefs to better someone, as opposed to just saying, "Hey, this is what I believe. You should believe it too." And but finding that middle ground where it's just like, "Hey, I this is what I do to better myself. This is what I do to find inner peace with myself. I'm not saying it's for you, but it works for me. And as long as it's not there to repress anybody else, you know, that can be a positive." But not a lot of films and not a lot of people really do that.
So let's kind of shift up a little bit, if you don't mind. There's some movies that I found in my experience that kind of focus on leadership. One of my favorites is Shawshank Redemption, right? We got Morgan Freeman. We got gosh, oh my God, why is his name escaping me now?
Tim Robbins.
Thank you, Tim. I'm like, Tim, I was trying to say Tim Curry, and I'm like, I know that's not right. We're not Rocky Horror.
No.
But you've got the, leader who is an actual leader. You have a leader who is the implied leader. You have a leader who emerges, and all these different characters come in. And I do feel that it teaches a lesson, even though they're in prison. And it does teach kind of a lesson of how people can change and become better citizens. What would you say?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that's interesting about Shawshank Redemption and what that movie has become over time. I mean, I think most people view that movie as this kind of this wonderful platonic love story between these two men over time. I think whatever lessons people might take out of it as far as like not letting your surroundings restrict you from being creative and living your life and that kind of stuff. I mean, but it's a movie that, you know, every time you watch it, you even though you're aware of the settings and you're aware of, you know, where they are for this entire film, basically, we never really get into the weeds about that they are prisoners, that they have committed, you know, there's talk now and then of that Morgan Freeman has, you know, murdered someone when he was a teenager. Tim Robbins obviously is accused of murdering his wife, but might be actually be innocent in regards to it. But everyone else, we don't really know too much about them. They're just, you know, and like there's that scene that the very early in the movie, not too early, but that was the time that I realized I was watching something really special with this movie, is the scene on the rooftop where they get the beers. And Morgan Freeman's got that wonderful narration where he says, like, we felt free. We for this one little moment in time, thanks to this, you know, the ingenious, you know, plotting of this new inmate, we were able to just sit on the rooftop under the sun, drinking beers with each other. We felt like men again. We felt like people again. And there's a wonderful movie that's coming out this summer, called Sing Sing, that actually was opening night at our Chicago Critics Film Festival this year. And it's a story. It stars Colman Domingo, as based on this true story, this true program of these men who are incarcerated who use theater to spark their own creativity to find themselves within their prison walls and whatnot. And it's this
Really?
wonderful film that I think is going to have a lot of people making comparisons to Shawshank. And it's one that it's coming out in July. So that's one people really should look out for, because that's a film that I think that people in that position or know people in that position, and even those on the outside who have the opportunity to enact change within those walls, as far as these programs are concerned, because that's kind of one of the reasons this film now exists, is to sort of bring about realization that these programs inside work. There's actually a Netflix movie, a documentary that was at Sundance this year called Daughters. That's also a story about inmates who are put together to have a father-daughter dance with their young children on the outside. And they're brought in for a day to have this father-daughter dance inside. And I mean, seriously, like, get your hankies out. But it's like these two movies, I think, are the kind of thing that can enact change, real change, and bring an awareness to programs like this that actually help people on the inside, whatever they may have done, but to help their rehabilitation and discover themselves again. And so when they are finally released, that there has been some change enacted in them. So I think these are, I mean, I think Shawshank is a good example. Sing Sing and Daughters are two more.
You know, it just shows, it's a great example of how the arts and media can come back and, you know, bring people back together. You know, describing dancing, describing having a dance with their children, or having, you know, theater while in prison is incredible. You know, you're cutting arts programs out of high
Right.
schools and stuff. But look at the incredible results that it's providing here. Let's, you know, if it's able to do this in the prison system, it's obviously doing something in the, you know, K-12 system.
Yeah,
Just
and
my
again,
opinion.
yeah, no, it is two very specific sort of, subsets of this topic that we're talking about, as far as, kind of movie enact, social change. And it could be, the social change you were just talking about with, like, the prison system, where people see these movies and they are inspired to write their congressman, write, their alderman, whatever it might be that gets these things done. Or you have the movies that enact change within us, and the change that is enacted within us then can inspire us to inspire greater social change in a way that the movie could never even imagined. So I think the very two specific things that movies can do for us, sometimes at the same time. But I think that's one of the many great things about movies, besides just, entertaining us.
You know, one of the greatest movies, in my opinion, that teaches us to, or at least taught me to find my inner leader and to find and to look within myself, was The Lion King. You know, being a 9-year-old looking up at this giant screen, watching, you know, Mufasa be trampled. I made a comparison once and I got in trouble, but you know what? This is my podcast, so I'm going to make the comparison again. Mufasa's death was my generation's equivalent to Bambi's mother dying. And seeing how Simba finds himself in Mufasa at the end to be able to come back and be the true leader of Pride Rock. You know, it really inspired me as a kid, you know, not knowing what I was learning, but you were learning, like you were saying, to be able to find your inner leader, if you find your inner self within.
Yeah, and it's and like films that deal with grief in some kind are so important, and they're too often, I don't know if filmmakers are just afraid to go there, especially when you're dealing with young children, right? I mean, like the joke of the Disney animated films over the years is that, the parents are going to get killed off, right? It's
Exactly.
like that's the joke over time. And yet, think about how many positives actually have probably come from that. There have probably been kids that suffered losses like that, or it prepares them for losses like that. I think that movies that shy away from those types of situations, are doing a disservice, especially to young people. in preparing them. And you know, even a movie like a movie like E.T., for example, which was a huge film when I was young, and still is to this day. And that's, you know, that's simply at the end of the movie, you know, E.T. goes home. But when you think about that in a greater context, yeah, okay, E.T. goes home, you're never gonna see him again. Well, that's like death, right?
Absolutely.
That is your best, the best friend that you've ever had, is gone forever. You know, the fact that Spielberg never made a sequel to that movie and still refuses to this day is one of the great bits of but one of the best things he's ever done, because you know, bringing E.T. back completely destroys the ending of that movie.
Wow, as a kid, I never thought of that. Obviously, I didn't think of that perspective, but as an adult now that I'm almost 40, I've never thought of that perspective, and you just blew my mind right now, Eric. I'm literally shell-shocked. I need to go buy some Reese's Pieces and go cry into them right now.
Well, yeah, well, you just put on the end of that movie and you're done. I am,
Yeah.
you know, I'm just thinking about it right now. I'm almost there. So, but yeah, but that's, I mean, that's the thing. It's like over time, it's like, you know, whether you've experienced that or not, that movie, a movie like that, again, subtly, I mean, it hits you in, you know, it's not subtle in that it's going for tears, but it's subtle in what those tears are actually meant for, right? Yes, it's these, it, you know, I always said one of the things I always say is that the hardest thing a movie can do is to make you cry without killing somebody, right? Like, it's very easy to make someone, you know, a tearjerker, the Nicholas Sparks films, all this stuff, like, you know, kill off a loved one and stuff like that. And you're gonna get some tears. You're gonna get a reaction, especially if you've gone through situations like that. But to do it without killing somebody, right? You know, just someone's going away, or a love is broken up, or something like that. To bring about tears like that, that you can then apply those tears to a whole bunch of areas in your own life, or through someone else's life that you've experienced, who is experiencing grief. I think those are some of the most important movies, I think, and I wish that more movies had the courage to deal with situations like that.
Well, I'd like to transition again a little bit more. We are recording this right after Memorial Day. I'm sure you saw all the same articles that I saw this week, that it was the worst Memorial Day box office in years.
Yes. Yeah.
And, a lot of it has to do with this convergence of media that we're now seeing. In your professional movie going, movie watching, movie loving opinion, is this convergence a good thing? Is it a bad thing? Where are we going with this? Where do you think?
You know, I mean, I guess it depends on who you ask. Right. I mean, from a business standpoint, I think that studios, executives, whoever is to blame or congratulate, depending on who you ask, for where we are today, they tend to jump the gun into waters that they've not fully tested, right? I mean, a lot of this, where we are today, basically came out of the pandemic. Right, is that we weren't prepared for the pandemic, you know, thanks to the hierarchy, and it put studios in a place where obviously no one was going to the theaters, everything was shut down. They had to figure out a way to get out stuff, that films that they had already had. It's, you know, some of it came from kind of a good place, like, hey, everyone's at home, let's give them something to do, let's keep them safe, let's do that. So there's a little bit going on with that, but then of course theaters started fighting back and saying you can't do this, and that led to the shrunken PVOD window, that is still in place today. These rules, like the reason that like the Fall Guy was on PVOD in 17 days because it didn't open to like over 50 million. So it basically gave the studio the option to take away from the theaters, say like, hey, okay, the movie didn't make 50 million, we got to make our money back, so we're going to put this on PVOD in 17 days. That was the bargain that was struck with theaters. If it opened big, okay, fine, it opened big, the window will be longer because people are going to see it, but people aren't going to see it in theaters, so we got to figure out a way to make our money back. We're putting on PVOD. Sorry, theater owners. And theater owners are pissed about that.
So that's why we have something like the Barbie movie playing forever before it hit the video on demand that you're describing.
Well, I mean, it's, I mean, what, the thing about the Memorial Day thing that makes me laugh is that everyone is trying to reduce it to a single thing, right? There's a camp that's saying that the shrunken window is the cause for it. People are waiting at home. Like, okay, but you could probably find a lot of examples where that's not the case. Then there's the idea that, not a lot of people are big into Mad Max. That, Fury Road only did so much money, so why were we expecting it to be some huge blockbuster when I could point at numbers and say, like, well, if you just look at the numbers of inflation, the Mad Max numbers over time have gone up with every movie. So there was reasonable expectations that it could do at least as well as Fury Road, especially since that movie's had 9 years for people to discover that the masterpiece that it is, which has always been one of my theories about movies, is that, I mean, it's not specifically my theory, but like the whole idea, like you're only as good as your last movie. And so like if you can have someone, movie make $100 million, everyone goes out to see this movie by, Kevin Costner. It's like the bodyguard theory, I always call it. That everyone went and saw The Bodyguard, but then everyone realized that movie sucked, and then nobody went and saw the next couple Kevin Costner movies because they fell out of trust with his movies. It's a workable theory, but it's a convergence of all of these issues that are putting us to where we are today. It's not one single thing. And in 2 weeks, when Inside Out 2 has like the biggest opening of the year, probably, you're gonna see the headlines are gonna say movies are back. They're gonna forget all about Memorial Day weekend when Deadpool and Wolverine opens this summer and does, $100+ million opening. Everyone's going, movies are back, right? And then, 6 weeks later, you're like, oh, movies are back are wrong again, even though it's September and that's not normally when people go see movies. So it's, there are problems, and there are problems that need to be fixed. I mean, but at the same time, I think all of us, even those of us who preach for theaters and want experiences in theaters, we're still humans, and it's like, oh man, if I could just sit on my bed and turn on Netflix, I'm gonna
In my
do that.
sweatpants and a
Right.
t-shirt, and
I don't have to get out, I don't have to shower, I don't have to go, leave the house, I don't have to pay for gas, I don't have to pay for a ticket, I don't have to pay for popcorn, I already got it here. All those things matter, and I don't think to fault people for that is the wrong message too. But at the same time, studios are shooting themselves in the foot by allowing that to happen. The rise of Netflix, the rise of all these streaming services. Again, it started off as, a semi-noble pursuit that look at all this entertainment we're giving you at home for this wonderful price, and then didn't realize that they were shooting themselves in the foot over here.
I have so many thoughts. I agree 1,000%, because I'm the, one day I want to go see it in the movie theater, the next day I want to, like you were describing, sit in my bed in my sweats and watch it with my gummy bears, so it's I you know and I don't know. I don't know the answer to this is I don't know the answer of how to fix this or where it's going or where it's going to be in the future. However, I would like your opinion. What kind of techniques or strategies can be used in the future in movies to enhance their educational impact, but also keep their entertainment value? Also keep, the if it's funny, the funny, the sad, et cetera. What do you think of that?
I mean, I think that the lesson, I think what movies need to do is what they've always needed to do, is to not come out and preach to, because now, especially now we're in a point where, there's a lot of preaching to the choirs. Whatever side people might be on, there's a lot of preaching to that very specific choir instead of finding a way to bridge the commonalities and the universal things that we all hold true. I think that I mean, like any school teacher, you don't want to be taught things. You want it to sort of, it's like doing a Karate Kid thing, right? It's like, you don't want to learn karate, but you have them paint the house, you have them wax the cars. And all next thing you know karate. That's the kind of thing that you want to know about with movies. Like, I just did the thing with E.T. with you that you say you never thought of before. I mean, well, seeing a movie and recognizing that, again, whether it's, opening yourself up to someone else's experiences without saying, like, this is what I'm doing to you, this is what I am showing you, this is how it is to be a good person. Just show them all the positives about, people. The people are just people. We all have, we all share so many things amongst one another that, pointing out our commonalities as opposed to showing us our differences is a huge thing. And I think that, again, like, that we have all of these like faith-based movies that come out, right? Speaking of preaching to the choir, they're very specific, they're very pointed to their point of view about what it means to be a Catholic or whatever. And a lot of it comes off as false and phony and heavy-handed. I don't even stuff that I agree with. Like, I'm sure there are a lot of people that watch Dead Poets Society go like, well, I agree with the message of this movie. That happens with a lot of movies, but I think the way that it goes about portraying it or telling it or shoving it down your throat does a disservice to it. So I think that you have, like, subtlety is the thing that you want to see in movies to have a greater impact, because no one wants to go to a faith-based movie and be told that. No one wants to go to a movie about racial struggle and being told that they're the evil kind of stuff. I mean, I don't even like saying it like that, but that's the kind of thing. Like, you want to go there and you want to agree with the message, and be a good person, but you don't want it to be like so heavy-handed. Like, okay, I get it, I get it, I get what you're saying.
Oh, I agree. Well, Eric, unfortunately, I could talk for hours and hours and hours about this in movies and social change and everything, and you are just blowing my mind today. Trust me. I'm like sitting back in my chair. I wish all the listeners could see me right now because my hair is standing on end and my eyes are giant. Like, I'm still shook over this ET thing. I'm going to be telling people for days about this. First of all, thank you for joining me today. I appreciate you taking the time out to talk with our listeners and just, talking to me about how movies can create social change. So thank you, thank you, thank you.
Absolutely, Alan. Thanks for having me.
Before we leave, though, I always like to give our guests any opportunity. Are there any kind of upcoming projects or things that you're working on that you'd like to share?
Well, I mean, the podcast that you mentioned at the top of the show, the Movie Madness podcast, I do twice weekly, so that's available at the Now Playing Network and an Apple Podcast and wherever people get their podcast. And the Friendship Dilemma, we do that a little more sporadically, but that's, we focus on one movie per show, and we have another episode we're actually taping this week, so we'll have another new episode coming up soon. And then at Elk Grove Cinema in Elk Grove Village, Illinois, we do what we call the Critics Classic Series, that we put we show a classic movie on the big screen, and we have a discussion with a film critic afterwards. And we do that on the first Wednesday and last Wednesday of every month. So that's, if you want to come out for that, we would love to have them. That's, that's twice a month at Elk Grove Cinema.
Yeah, that'd be great for our listeners. We are based here in Chicago, Eric and I, and so if you can come out and support, that would be great. I would love to see you out there. And Eric, I'd love to come out and support myself. So I hope to see you out there one day soon.
Yeah, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Again, thank you so much for being here. To all my listeners, thank you. Our next episode, we're going to talk about, again, I say it every episode, but one of my next favorite things, television. Television, 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 and how television can create social change. And my guest next episode is somebody who is going to be so exciting to pick his brain, as well as just as much fun as I had with Eric. We're going to be talking with Richard Vaxke, I believe is the way to say his name. I'm sorry if I'm butchering it. I really will. I really, really am. But he was one of the original writers of the fame comedy, The Golden Girls, and worked on many, many episodes. So we'll be talking to him and talking about television and all things television. So, again, thank you all for listening. And as Mickey Mouse says, my friends, I will see you real soon.